Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent. And you're listening to the HR Power Hour, and today we're talking with Matt Ball, Vice President at Maine Medical Center and in charge of their HR department. Matt, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, David. Good to be back.
You know, it's been like 3 years.
It has been 3 years.
3 years since you were on the show, and you were at an attorney office back then.
I was. I was practicing law here in the Portland region, and then, you know, I'm now a fully recovered lawyer working in the HR department at Maine
Medical
Center.
Well, welcome to the dark side. It's great.
I'm getting by.
That's a good thing. Yeah. You know, you've had a great career. You've certainly done a lot of things. One of the things I wanted to talk to you about today is when HR people think of their career, they look at things and they say, you know, where's my path for the future? And you've had one that takes you to different directions, different organizations. I'd like you to share your story a little bit with us today. And we're certainly going to talk about where you see HR in the future and where you see what's going on. But let's talk about you a little bit. So go ahead, share
Sure.
your story.
Well, thank you, David. So, you know, my story is nonlinear. I think, you know, I started my legal practice out in the Midwest, met my wife, who was born and raised in rural Maine, and she made it very clear to me that for our marriage to survive, we'd be moving to Maine. So I moved to Maine and did what many young attorneys do. You find a job with a law firm. Practiced law for a number of years, really enjoyed the law firm experience, but was looking for an opportunity to work directly with a company, you know, to build something. I think oftentimes lawyers can feel like hired guns when they're brought in, and because we bill by the hour or did bill by the hour, you don't always have the opportunity to have the depth of influence at an organization to really improve it. So I accepted a position with Bath Ironworks, worked in their labor relations department for about 2 years, and then was approached by Maine Health to come work in their HR department. So it was really my first journey out of the legal practice was when I went over to Maine Medical Center and Maine Health. And my initial role there was the director of HR compliance and policy. A job
that sounds legal to me.
It is. And the, you know, job as exciting as the title sounds like. And it was because of my expertise. I had worked on with employment laws and guiding and coaching employers for a number of years. And the more I got into it, you know, I really landed in healthcare by accident. I wasn't looking specifically to leave the defense industry or stop being a lawyer. I fell into healthcare. It was an opportunity. It was a promotion opportunity at the time. So the door opened and I jumped, and it's been the best thing I ever did. I've discovered a passion for healthcare, being part of the healthcare process and system, and feel like I've really found a calling working in healthcare. Not that I didn't enjoy what I was doing previously, but never with the same sense of purpose that I have working in healthcare. And then I worked in my role as the director for about 14 months, and then my mentor at Maine Health, Maine Medical Center, Judy West, approached me and said, hey, what do you think about, you know, completely leaving the legal world and stepping into more of an HR operation strategic role at Maine Medical Center? And thought about it for about 2 minutes and said, absolutely. And so I've been in the role now since July of 2015 and have absolutely loved it. Love being part of the operations side of healthcare, figuring out ways that we can support our frontline caregivers, support our patients and their families, and really help drive the mission that is Maine Medical Center, Maine Health.
You know, you're talking about decision-making time, right? When you make that decision to switch to a new role, sometimes that can be difficult for individuals, difficult for people. What are some of the things that you say to yourself today, now that you've been in the role a few months, right? What are some of the skill sets you say, boy, if I only knew, I would have X. What would that be?
Yeah, I joke with the folks I work with there that my job description really only needs one line, and it's other duties as assigned. I think that, and this happens in many, many professions, and particularly as you continue to advance in your career, you're pulled in brought into many different scenarios that are just beyond what your job description or what question you could possibly think to ask would be. You know, when I talked about stepping into this role, I really asked questions to get a better sense about what direction the organization was moving in, what direction the organization felt HR's role was in supporting its mission. And based on those things, I felt very comfortable making a quick decision. I had been working with a lot of our HR leaders in the system for a while, so it made a lot of sense for me to transition.
Yeah, HR is a pivotal role when it comes to dealing with the people, because, hey, that's what healthcare is all about. Every organization, let's be honest, doesn't matter healthcare. It's about the people. Companies are nothing more than a bunch of people doing something for a cause, whatever that may be. But people can be a challenge because they don't stay put. You know, I always liken when I go back to my retail days, I always talk about a shirt on a hanger. It doesn't go anywhere. It doesn't do anything. It's pretty easy to manage. Just sits there, right? Doesn't make a decision to get up and leave. Doesn't talk back. Doesn't do all those things. What are some of the things that you say to yourself, boy, you know, if I knew this challenge would be out there, if people could just understand what HR is really about, what are some of the things that they challenge you on?
I think, you know, HR evolves. And, I, you know, particularly as we continue to evolve our HR business partner model, it's really trying to empower our managers to be the conduit for leading their people, as opposed to HR being the behind-the-scenes manager of the departments. And so a lot of that is just helping our business leaders and our managers and directors and others understand that you know, their role in leading people, and that HR is there to help coach, to help guide, to advise, to help them think strategically about their workforce, to help them think strategically about where they want their departments to go, how the goals of that department align with the larger organization's goals, and how HR can help drive that. You know, in healthcare also, whatever debate may have existed between the connection of employee engagement and quality outcomes, or HCAHPS scores, which are patient satisfaction scores, that debate is dead. There's an absolute connection. So HR's role in healthcare is even more vital than it's ever been, because, you know, we are really helping the business drive employee engagement and thinking about how do we empower all of our people to be, you know, problem solvers and to be the next generation of leaders creating high quality outcomes for our patients, particularly as the healthcare landscape in general is changing at a dramatically fast pace.
No, there's no question about that. And we're talking with Matt Ball, Vice President of HR for Maine Medical Center, Maine Health. You know, leadership starts at the top, right? And a lot of HR professionals sometimes say that CEOs, C-suite individuals sometimes challenge them a lot, especially when they're looking at ROI, right? So talk about a little how to define ROI when it's a soft skill. And that's a real challenge at times. And healthcare is no different than any other organization in terms of understanding that there has to be a benefit to doing something. And you talk a lot about coaching. You talk a lot about, you know, a training development of it. And some of it's compliance driven. I get that. But we're talking about soft skill development. How do you think about that and talk about it to the C-suite and get them really involved with that decision?
I think you have to provide measurable outcomes. You know, leadership development, while it may be a soft skill from a development perspective, you've got to find ways to get metrics to measure it. So, for example, employee engagement surveys are absolute ways that you can identify specific measures of where employees, how they view their leader, how they view the organization, and then drive accountability to that leader level through providing leadership development training, coaching. So you're right. If we step into any leader's office, particularly a C-suite, and say, geez, we'd like to do this. We think it's a great idea and be really beneficial. The first question I hope they ask me, because I go in there prepared to talk about it, is, and here's how we're going to measure it. And here's how we're going to demonstrate its value. And here's how we're going to be able to deliver the results. And here's where we think it's going to help us get to. So I think HR leaders have to evolve from the soft skill mentality and really drive towards how is the services we provide adding measurable value to the organization and tying our measures to things that the business measures. So if HCAPs and employee engagement are important to the business, then I want my HR partners and my other HR leaders talking with their department about how are you measuring this? How are you driving this? What do we need to do to help your people understand the importance of this? How do we coach and mentor and lead the organization to achieve its overall goals, not just specific HR initiative goals?
Well, I think there's no question that negativity in the workplace or someone who's not performing at a level as a leader is a measurable change if they do change their behavior, if they modify their behavior, if they understand why they have whatever quirk it is they have to get it in terms of a better organization, a better focus, a better direction. That's measurable. It is measurable because the outcome of that department will improve, right?
That's right.
And the outcome of that overall performance will improve. And so it's not necessarily in the sense of an immediate dollar response. It's really just the team starts gelling. And once the team starts gelling, then the rest of it comes along. So you have to be able to take them through that process, don't you?
You do. And there are certain things that you can measure from an ROI, from a cost perspective, for example. In healthcare, physician recruiting is a very hot topic right now.
Sure is.
And you know, we can certainly provide a number of business cases to our leaders about how we want to approach physician recruitment. So when you put together an ROI or a business plan for either getting more staff hired in the recruiting side to lead a physician recruitment effort, or you decide to outsource that to an organization to do that physician recruitment, you can do measurable cost-benefit analysis as it relates to those types of endeavors. And then you can track it. So here's what we paid to bring this person in-house. Here's the number of physicians that we were able to recruit. Here's what would have cost us if we had used an outside place. And you can demonstrate the value in that way. But I think from a people development perspective and being people officers of the organization, we've also got to get our leaders comfortable with being measured on how their people view them and how their people respond to them and how they're leading their people. And it's a dynamic that I think lots of organizations are starting to evolve and have those discussions with their leaders about what's their role in managing their people and what's HR's role in supporting them in helping to drive the people side of the business. And that's a dialogue that is exciting, that could be challenging, but I think is the way that HR can continue to drive value in organizations.
Well, retention is a big word right now because obviously the market has shifted and it is an employee market now. No question. It used to be an employer market. Now it's an employee market. And people have choices. And certainly in Maine in healthcare, there's no question. There's no shortage of choices in the area. So all that we're talking about really is about retaining great talent. What does it take to do so? And we all know that salary, while important, once you reach a certain level, it's not the most important thing. It's really about making a difference. And in healthcare, you can make a difference. I say it all the time. I do great work. My company does great work, but we don't save lives. Now, you could argue that we save individuals who may not have been able to get a career and help them through the process. But it's not like a surgeon on an operating table. You guys literally save lives. And so it elevates the level of importance and elevates the level of, really making sure it happens every day.
Absolutely. I always go back to, my college philosophy course, talking about Maslow's hierarchy of needs.
Oh, there, I remember that.
Remember that one?
I
yeah, that old pyramid
sure.
that you
oh,
see
yes, yes.
all the place. And, yep. You're absolutely right. We've got to be able to provide a baseline sense of comfort and security to our people. Otherwise, we'll never be able to elevate them to that next level of high employee engagement and driving really quality outcomes for our patients. The other thing that I think is important from a recruitment and retention perspective are two things. One, you've got to help people feel connected to the mission, vision, and values of your organization because that's the value proposition right. that helps set people apart. I have the privilege to occasionally speak at our new employee orientation, and then at our new leader orientation, I speak every month as we have new leaders coming through. And I always start with the same question with our leaders, which is, what is the one asset that can never be copied at Maine Medical Center? And people will throw out, well, we've got this great CT scan machine, we've got this physician who's doing this really cool technique. And I say, you're right, you know, we do have that great CT scan machine, but someone can get a, you know, capital loan and buy the same machine. We don't have monopoly. The surgeon's probably doing peer review studies and are going to be talking about the procedure he's using, and eventually others are going to adopt it. And so we get some immediate benefit, but maybe the long-term benefit isn't as much. The only true competitive advantage any organization has is its people. It's the only thing that can't be copied, that can't be duplicated, that can't be replicated. So are we paying enough attention to cultivating that asset, our people, as we are with cultivating and investing in machines or facility space or other assets that belong to an organization? And I think once our leaders start thinking about it in that terms, that this is our one true competitive advantage, not to mention it's the right thing to do to support people, we start to turn the dial. And people start to approach the business from a different perspective of how do we empower our people. The other thing, the second point is, you know, our workforce is changing. We've got four and I think close to five different generations coming into the workforce. I'm one of those pesky millennials, which, you know, I assume that the world was just going to be handed to me the second I stepped out of college. I was amazed I wasn't named CEO of the world immediately upon graduation. But, you know, I've never been in an organization for longer than 2 years. And it's not because I wasn't happy or because I didn't feel satisfied. It's just because change is fine with me. I'm comfortable with change. Change doesn't bother me. I don't panic. I want to be at a place where I find great meaning, not just excellent benefits and pay, but I want a place that really has meaning. And I think that's part of the reason why I feel so connected to healthcare is we do save lives. And while I'm not in the operating room saving the life, you know, my role as leading some of our people initiatives is to make sure I help our caregivers focus on saving lives.
Well, you know, we're talking with Matt Ball. He's the Vice President of HR for Maine Medical Center. And we'll be right back. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB. Hi, this is David Chulo of the HR Power Hour. If you could spend a day meeting successful business owners and learning from top-notch business experts, you would be inspired, wouldn't you? It would give you momentum. So make plans now to attend the Maine Biz Momentum Convention on November 10th at the Augusta Civic Center. Visit with over 130 business-to-business companies and find products and services you can use. Learn from experts at Maine Biz U by choosing from 9 different sessions on topics such as raising financing, business succession, and navigating new regulations. Network with Maine's business community. Have lunch. Set a meeting. Enjoy free food. Win great prizes. Meet customers and new prospects at the Maine Biz Momentum Convention on November 10th. For information, go to MomentumConvention.com and say thanks to the Momentum Convention sponsors, Eaton Peabody, TD Bank, Mimic, and the Portland Jetport. That's MomentumConvention.com.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at JacksonLewis.com. That's JacksonLewis.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB and presented by CMAcareer.com. Today we're talking with Matt Ball, Vice President of HR at Maine Medical Center. We're having a great conversation about HR today and his career. Yes, it's all about you, Mr. Millennial.
You know, I didn't ask for it, but I am glad we're doing it.
It's just shocking dismay. You know, you mentioned in the last segment about millennials, and now that they are literally the largest workforce population as of this year, you know, it's interesting. We've been talking a lot at conferences and different places that I go about the new way of work, which is to understand that if a person comes and works for you for 2, 3, or 4 years and then leaves, it's not a bad thing. It used to be that retention meant that you keep them forever. And that is not necessarily the wave of the future. You get them for 2, 3, 4 years. They work for you. They work really hard. They leave. they might be back. And some of the mentality out there has been, well, they've left. They're dead to me. I think of Mr. Wonderful on Shark Tank. You're dead to me. But the reality is that's not the case. You gain experience across the board. You gain experiences, all the different organizations, different things. You might come back. Are you seeing that thought process shifting at MaineMed as well?
We are. We have a lot of discussion, particularly as we think about, you know, the future of healthcare. And, you know, we have the millennials on the one end, and then we've got the baby boomer generation on the other end, and that generation, which is inching closer towards retirement. And so a lot of discussions that we have are about workforce planning. How do we generate that next pipeline of talent coming through here, recognizing that the talent we're recruiting now to come into the organization thinks differently about work, has different priorities in the workplace, and what may have motivated or driven one generation doesn't necessarily drive and motivate another generation. So how do we start framing up and looking at all of our programs, all of our policies, and the way that we engage with the workforce so we're providing meaning to four different generations, which are all in our workplace? And so you can approach it really one of two ways. One, you can try to customize different things for the different groups, but that's not necessarily efficient and really hard to manage. Or what you can do is...
And can create animosity between the groups.
Absolutely.
That's right.
Absolutely. Which is not anything we want to
encourage. Just the
opposite. We want to do the exact opposite.
That's right.
And so part of what that is, you know, what is the common thread that people, regardless of the, you know, how they come to the workplace, they look for, and it's meaning. If you provide meaningful work and you help people understand how the work that they do is connected to a larger mission, vision, and core set of values, then you give yourself the best opportunity to attract and retain that talent for as long as you're going to. Because you're exactly right. The new normal is that talent is going to come and go. They're going to explore. They're going to be adventurous. They're going to change careers multiple times. You know, we do see increasingly second careers coming to us, meaning people who were firefighters in one for 5 years are now RNs working in some of our units. We see individuals who were lawyers who then come and stumble into human resources. So I think people are falling into organizations in a myriad of ways. One of the opportunities for healthcare is to think outside of healthcare. I think it's easy for healthcare to, particularly on the non-clinical side, to think that healthcare experience is absolutely vital for successful placement into a healthcare organization. And I think what that does is, A, it limits the scope of people you're going to be able to recruit. And number two, you miss a whole group of people who are really good at things like critical thinking, problem solving, lifelong learning. And those are the intangible skills that you can put into any organization, and that individual is going to thrive.
Well, I think that's important because a lot of people who are in a career think that they're stuck, right? They're stuck in doing retail, they're stuck in doing accounting, they're stuck in doing whatever it may be because they may have 10, 15 years of experience in that, and they sometimes don't think about their resume in terms of what can I give to other organizations that aren't necessarily linear, but really outside the box thinking in terms of different thought processes. And if you've managed people, it's still an asset. Mm-hmm. And it may not be something that is accounting driven. It's really more of a, we talked about a soft skill. What are these skills that you can transfer to other organizations?
Absolutely. And for me, when I look at bringing in new HR partners or new HR professionals to my team, the first thing I look for is how good of a problem solver are they? You know, how good are they at taking complex situations, sometimes high emotion involved in that, and thinking through and being very clear and analytical about what's a path forward to provide a solution? And that doesn't mean that everyone's going to leave feeling happy about the solution, but are they comfortable in thinking through and being problem solvers? I think the most valuable skill in any organization is problem solving. Can they effectively problem solve?
Well, there's no question that people don't leave organizations because typically of the organization. They leave because of people.
Mm-hmm.
And either they don't understand the decision-making process, or they don't understand why something happened, or there's a conflict of some manner. But it's typically a conflict. It's they don't believe in the leader. They don't believe in the leadership. They don't believe in the managing process. They don't believe that it's fair, or they don't believe that this person has their best interest in mind. So it's not typically about, oh, you know, I don't like working for this organization. I don't like working for my boss. And so what you're doing is really thinking about how to manage and develop those people to get those skill sets and make it work.
Absolutely. The other factor there, David, is, you know, we live in a very and increasingly transparent world. And so the ability for leaders and others to hoard information or try to gatekeep the free flow of information to the people is really hard. And one quick way to lose credibility is if you're not transparent. Now, there are going to be certain things that are sensitive, and you're going to have to use discretion, and that's part of what being a leader is. But I think that one of the things that our leaders are working on and developing, and it's at every organization that I've ever worked with, is how do you balance being transparent with making sure that you're not over panicking people or that you're not putting people in an uncomfortable position. And that's a skill set that I think we're still trying to figure out. How do we develop that? And what's that fine line?
Well, it's always because different people interpret things differently, and the perception is the problem, right? So you can say anything, and your tone, your inflection, the written word, whatever you put on paper is dissected by 10 people 10 different ways. And that makes it a challenge. It doesn't really matter what you intended to say versus what actually was said doesn't necessarily come across that way. And a good leader can narrow that scope and make it more 5 out of 10 don't understand versus 10 out of 10. And that's how I perceive it to be.
Yeah. I also think being proactive about how you communicate. So when you have institutional goals or strategic goals set, how quickly are you communicating that to your team to talk about how you're going to support those goals? How quickly are you communicating changes in the organization? Is it 2 weeks after you learn about it? Is it 2 hours after you learn about it? And what's your vehicle for communicating? Is it, you know, in person? Is it going to be through an all email blast, knowing that increasingly people are not using email? Is it through social media where it's now public to the entire world? It's one of the great challenges we have is how do we effectively communicate, particularly when you've got a large population of people working.
Well, communication is increasingly becoming more challenging because of the number of ways you can communicate. It used to be pretty simple. Phone, in person. There really weren't other choices. Oh, I suppose print. But that would be the only three options. Now, you don't even know half the sites that are out there that people are connecting on. And then some people refuse to connect on others, and the generations really make it a challenge. You know, when we think about some that's still reading the newspaper versus some that are getting on an app versus some that won't even look at any of it, and they get it off Facebook or social media. You know, it's just and half of it may or may not be true. That's the other half of the thing. So there is a problem. So much communication. We've actually overloaded the system with communication that it's hard to dissect what's really real, what's really meaningful, and what really matters.
Agreed. And, you know, one of the things that I constantly look at, and I know that our team constantly looks at, is how do we help employees and others and leaders identify sources of truth? So where is the place where they know they can go to get absolutely accurate information, regardless of whatever else may be floating out there? And is that through a, you know, innovative intranet page where it doesn't look like the old standard intranet page, but it looks more like a Facebook feed or a Twitter feed? Or is it through daily reminders? Is it through face-to-face communications? How do we provide people so that they know where they can go to get answers and what is the source of truth? And that's always going to be a challenge in
always.
The information age.
By the way, that's been the challenge for years. We're not talking anything
new. I didn't just stumble upon a great idea.
No, really. I mean, you think about it, it goes back all the way through history, right? This is nothing new. It's just there are more ways to communicate today than ever. And, you know, when people are trying to learn networking or when people are trying to connect with a person in an organization, you said it. You send them an email, they may not see it. You send them a text, they may not see it. You send them a Facebook connect. You know, if you had told me 5 years ago that I would have CEOs on my Facebook page connected, I would have, first of all, 5 years ago, I'm not sure I wasn't even on Facebook. I can think that for just a second here. But, you know, I mean, it's just a different thought process, right? You just wouldn't even think about it.
It is. And, you know, if you look at what some really innovative companies are doing, so I'm a huge fan of Zappos.
It's a great company.
I think they're just a great innovative company. And you see, you know, sites like Glassdoor or Yelp with reviews, and you'll actually see executives from Zappos responding directly to Glassdoor or Yelp to the people who are posting comments. So even how our leaders interact with the public and how they interact with their employees is dramatically different and will continue to evolve as we see organizations and expectations for people evolve and what they want from the workplace.
Well, you know, typically the C-suite is still the greatest, either the greatest generation or baby boomers. And so they're kicking and screaming doing this, but right. I mean, that's true. The innovative ones are, but most are kicking and screaming still. So we talk about people who are trying to get a job. You still have to remember your audience and who you're going to be talking to, who that is. And so you might put together this amazing profile or performance. It just doesn't necessarily go to the right person. They look at it and don't get it.
That's right.
Right. You know. So you've still got to really target it today, more than ever.
You do. And things that maybe are meaningful to one generation in the workplace aren't as meaningful to another generation. So, you know, my dad would have loved nothing more than to have, you know, FaceTime with his boss over lunch. For me, I just want, you know, an extra PTO day so I can go spend it with my kids and my family. So I think what people want from the workplace and what they want from their leader is different, and it changes. And there's no one-size-fits-all approach other than valuing every person for what they bring to the organization and making sure they feel connected to the mission, the vision, and the values of that organization.
Well, that is the issue of stereotyping even generations, because I know individuals who are in the younger generation who are more like the older generation,
right,
and vice versa, right? So you do have this individuality of an individual who's old school or, you know, really innovative. So you really can't completely stereotype that. But there are reasons for stereotypes, because they're typically quite true for the masses, right?
Yeah.
We talk about it all the time.
And I'm not meaning to imply that, you know, there's a stereotype for a particular generation. I think that it's more, you got to look at individually what do each of the people that you support expect or want, and what's the best way to support them, and what's the best way to help them be successful in your organization.
What is one or two quick new informational tools that you're using as an organization to connect with? You talked a little about the internet feed, but what are some of the things you're seeing happening in Maine, which is typically a couple of years behind whatever the world is doing?
Well, certainly on the clinical side, you know, the rollout of Epic, which is the electronic medical record, is dramatically changing the way that providers communicate with providers and the way that patients communicate with providers. So that's certainly on the clinical side.
By the way, can I just make a note about Epic? I want to let you know that we were talking to a doctor one day, and the doctor said, I said to him, so how's Epic going? He goes, Dave, can I just make a question, a point about Epic? I go, what's that? He said, in all the years that you've ever known the word Epic, have you ever known it to be followed by something good? And I went, is this an exception?
Well, what I would say is, you know, Ben-Hur was an epic movie. So I would say, yes, there are many things that are good
about
it.
It's a joke, but, you know, it's funny. And that was during the transition period. But they will tell you that the amount of information is tremendous.
It is tremendous.
And that is also probably a little bit of the downside, right? Because there's so much information coming at you until you understand it and know it.
That's right. Like anything else, anything that's new or different or a change, there's always going to be an adjustment period. But if you think about what is trying to be accomplished with that, it's really patient-centered.
No question. Right? And it is a really good program. It was a good joke.
It is a good joke.
I give him good points for jokes today.
And, you know, the other thing that we look at is certainly, you know, a couple of structural things. One, the volume of meetings that we have just to, you know,
to plan the meeting
that's going to come up. And is there a better space for us to actually do real-time problem solving? So, you know, some of the things that are happening at Maine Medical Center are things like operational excellence, which is a Lean Six Sigma program that really empowers the frontline caregivers to help solve the problems that are facing the organization with leadership and senior leadership support. So we're trying to change the way we communicate, a little more FaceTime, a little more interaction, a little more data-driven, some of those things. I think one opportunity we have is how do we have employees and leaders communicate. I think email continues to be a challenge, both in terms of its volume and in terms of, you know, just the sheer quantity of messaging we try to get across in our email messaging. You know, people don't often pick up paper flyers anymore.
No.
So, you know, we have social media outlets, but are they being widely utilized? Some of our clinical areas don't have access to social media during the workday for obvious patient safety and care reasons.
Yeah.
So it's one of the things we haven't been able to really crack yet is how do we effectively communicate across the organization in a way that, you know, cascades to everybody. So we do a lot of communication, but is it the right communication? I think it's one of the things we always look at and always ask ourselves is, are we reaching enough people?
We're talking with Matt Ball, Vice President of HR and Maine Medical Center, Maine Health. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB, and we will be right back. Running a company can feel like you're surrounded. A key person quits. A big project presents itself. You need good people fast. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Our contract staffing service will fill a position or find the right talent for a short-term project. Hundreds of companies choose us because we deliver people that fit. Career Management Associates, your contract staffing solution. Go to cmacareer.com.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com. Today we're talking and having a great time with Matt Ball, Vice President of HR from Maine Medical Center. He's back, and we're happy about that. Welcome back, Matt.
Thank you.
You know, I'd like to switch the topic here to a little bit more of a serious topic. Not that anything we have said before wasn't serious, but I'd like to talk about an issue having to do with the opiate epidemic that's happening here in Maine. I'm sure Maine Health is on the front line of seeing the concerns, the issues, the things that come across the board, everything from the emergency room all the way up through employees, of course, that are at your organization. Tell me a little about what you're seeing. Tell me a little bit about what the organization is doing to try to help combat that, either publicly or internally.
Sure. So we certainly see it in terms of patient volumes. You know, with some of the recent closures here in the Portland market relating to substance abuse treatment, you know, the emergency departments, I think, in the greater Portland area are seeing a lot of that patient base that maybe had been seeking treatment through other avenues. So just from a patient volume perspective, you know, it's impacting our caregivers. You know, healthcare is inherently unpredictable place. So anytime you add additional unpredictable elements into a workplace, you know, you're always very concerned about staff safety, patient safety. So that's something that, you know, from a HR perspective keeps me up at night is, are we doing enough to keep our staff safe, doing enough to keep our patients safe? That's a huge, huge challenge. You know, I think that if you just look at, you know, sort of the population health aspects of the state of Maine, it's really unique how Maine approaches population health. Insofar as, you know, Maine Health itself really is at the front lines of leading the population health charge. You know, there's lots of people doing great work all around the state, but when you think about the work that Maine Health is doing to promote, address, and really try to provide population health solutions, I think that this opiate epidemic that we're facing is a tremendous opportunity from a population health perspective to figure out what are going to be some standard levels of care for how we treat this. What are going to be opportunities we have to promote ways to address maybe some of the underlying root causes that lead to substance abuse. You know, certainly mental health issues are a big concern, both from a patient volume perspective, but also are we providing enough services to people who need help and who would benefit from really targeted treatments to do that. So I think there's work at the Maine Health level and others talking about this.
Well, this is really more of a community based approach that has to be done. I mean, it almost has to be a partnership of community, healthcare, government, private sector. I mean, this is probably one of the, if you want to say, more dangerous epidemics that we've seen because of the quality and quantity of the stuff that's coming in. I mean, this is potent stuff.
There is, in fact, there was a great news story that I saw where there was a police officer, maybe a police captain, talking about that year to date there had been 208 deaths due to opiate overdose or heroin overdose. And he analogized it, if there had been 208 deaths due to the avian flu or 208 deaths due to Ebola, there would be an absolute public outcry.
Pandemonium.
Pandemonium.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And that's not to say that those things are equal, but from a perspective of the impact on people's lives and the fact that people are losing lives as a result of this, what's our response going to be to help address this? And I agree with you. I think that there's not going to be a one solution or one silver bullet to solve this. It's really going to be a collaborative effort between those on the front lines of population health, those on the front lines of policy, those on the front lines of enforcement, and those on the front lines of providing care to individuals.
Yeah, and this is really a nationwide epidemic.
It is.
It's not just Maine is a small piece of the puzzle, but it's an important piece because we're here.
That's right.
And we see it in the schools. We see it all the way up through the food chain, if you want to call it. And there's a lot of risk, inherent risk, in terms of employers dealing with it at the workplace. So it's right across the board.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, from a workplace perspective, you know, it's really important for particularly healthcare employers to, ensure that they've got robust diversion programs, that they're doing a lot of education, and that they're doing a lot of outreach and support for people. You know, at Maine Medical Center, Maine Health, we have a very robust employee assistance program, which is a great benefit and asset. And some of that's helping take away some of the stigma associated
right.
With those things and really trying to figure out how we can help people because, addiction is real and it's serious. And, you know, our goal is to help people both from our business but also from an employee perspective. But, you know, sometimes people make poor decisions.
That's right.
And, you know, we also have to think about the larger impacts of those decisions, and we have to do what's appropriate under the circumstances.
The other issue I'd bring up is in 2016, it looks like it's going to happen. The ballot initiative having to do with the legalizing marijuana in the state of Maine. And we know that certainly Colorado and Washington or Oregon and others have gone down this road. It certainly has flooded the healthcare system, no question about that. All you have to do is go to Colorado and look up any of the articles having to do with how the healthcare is dealing with it. We can talk about the legal aspect of it, but that's not why we're here, even though you are a lawyer.
Recovering
lawyer, that's right. What is does Maine Health have a position? Does it, is it planning for the future of, what if?
Yeah, I mean, we're always looking and evaluating the next regulatory tsunami that's, you know, coming down the pike. I think we need to wait and see exactly where the state decides to go and make a reasonable determination about the position that, you know, the system would take. You know, certainly from the, you know, to slide into the legal aspects of this, you know, employers in Colorado and Washington are facing the same challenge, which is you've got the federal law that very clearly says it's illegal.
Right.
You know, it's banned by the Controlled Substances Act. Mm-hmm. And so from a preemption, the legal doctrine of federal preemption, you know, I think there's an open question about what's the true validity of state laws that are actually passed. And if employers decide to take a stance on it, against it, let's say, for example, what's the real risk to the employer? Maybe some litigation costs or some other things. But, you know, I think until there's a broader solution that, you know, aligns the conflicting laws that are out there, it just puts employers in a really difficult situation for how do they manage this.
Yeah, I don't see anything that's going to change at the federal level today because they've been very clear they're not going to enforce the law as it currently stands. And whether I agree or disagree with the premise behind whether medical marijuana actually works, there's still a law. And so it kind of defeats the purpose in terms of having a law that nobody's enforcing. But I get off my track there for just a little bit. From a recreational standpoint, in terms of marijuana coming in 2016 or 2017, people say it's a gateway drug. I don't know. what does the healthcare community say?
You know, I'm not a clinician, so I don't really know enough about the medicinal or non-medicinal benefits of it. I think that that's a clinical decision that people much smarter than me who have clinical training can answer much easier. So basically, I'm dodging your question.
Yes,
David.
That's all right. He's being a lawyer, ladies and gentlemen.
But what I will say is, you know, from an HR employer perspective, whether marijuana is legal or not legal, it doesn't change the fact that people can't come to work impaired. So whether, you know, they're on alcohol prescription medications that are prescribed or marijuana prescribed or otherwise, you can't come to work impaired. And so there is a solution for employers, regardless of where the law lands, which is you can't come to work impaired. And in healthcare, it's even more prevalent because lots of healthcare organizations have fragrance-free policies, and that's in large part to ensure that our patients are in an environment where they can heal. So there are a number of ways that employers can address that through policy, regardless of whether it's passed or not passed.
We're talking with Matt Ball, Vice President of HR at Maine Medical Center. We will be right back on News Talk WLOB.
If you're responsible for hiring and firing, you know it can be like a roulette wheel. If your new hire turns out to be a bad hire, well, all you've lost is time and money. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Don't gamble with your hiring. We have a better solution. We've helped hundreds of companies like yours find the right talent, and we guarantee it. Career Management Associates delivers people that fit. Go to cmacareer.com.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
At highway speeds, the average text takes your eyes off the road for about 5 seconds. That's enough time to travel the length of a football field. Stop texts, stoprex.org. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMAcareer.com. And today we've been talking with Matt Ball, Vice President of HR for Maine Medical Center. You know, we have just a few more minutes here left, Matt. What are some of the causes that Maine Med is really focusing on that you think are things that the audience should know about?
I think there's two big things in the community that are focusing on right now. One is the United Way campaign that's getting ready to kick off for the greater Portland region. And so, you know, I would certainly encourage anybody who is a supporter of the United Way to contribute to that campaign. It's a great cause, and they do an amazing amount of positive work all across the state and certainly in the greater Portland area. So that's certainly something that Maine Medical Center and Maine Health is supporting. The other thing is specific to Maine Medical Center, and it's with our Barbara Bush Children's Hospital. So there's an initiative right now led through our development office and Matt Parks, who's one of our development directors, to get 2,000 individuals signed up for a specialty license plate in support of the Barbara Bush Children's Hospital. And I tweeted it out a couple weeks ago. It's on my LinkedIn page. It's on my Facebook page, and it's a really great cause. And the way it works is there's a great family who had had their child, obviously, in the children's hospital and really felt connected to the great care that they had received and wanted to figure out a way that they could help contribute back to the hospital, knowing that they didn't have the financial means themselves to do it. So they came up with this great idea about getting 2,000 signatures signed up for a specialty plate. You know, you've got the Loon plate and the, this plate. This would be the Barbara Bush Children's Hospital plate. And if we get 2,000 signatures, then individuals will be able to, you know, have those specialty plates. And the great thing is that once those specialty plates are in place, the fees people pay to renew those, a portion of that will actually go to the Barbara Bush Children's Hospital. And, you know, some of our physician leaders in that, you know, if this thing takes off, they've described it as a game changer for the children's hospital. It's a way to really impact and positively promote the care that we give to families and the children that Barbara Bush Children's
Hospital
serves.
That's a great cause. Certainly, everybody knows that after this show, we will be providing this live tape of what exactly everything that was said today. HRPowerHour.com. We will put that link. We'll get it from you. We'll put it up on the website so that after the show, people could sign up if they go there. We encourage you to do so. You know, click there and sign up for those two. Let's get that 2,000 signatures. Matter of fact, I'll talk to a couple of the other radio hosts that do the shows here on Saturday, and we'll see if we can get that on every.
That
one
would be
of them.
Great.
We'll make that happen. You love HR. You've been in it now for a few months. You're a recovering lawyer. you know, when you think about, did you see yourself in this role?
No, I did not. I never. Once in a million years would envision that I would be a human resource executive in Portland, Maine at all. But I think if I could give any career advice to anybody listening, thinking about what their next transition is, you know, never say no to an opportunity. Dive in with both feet and, you know, take chances and take risks. I've taken a lot of risks in my career, and thankfully to date they've paid off. And just because you know, didn't envision yourself in a role doesn't mean that's not the perfect place for you to be.
Right. You got to keep your mind open.
That's right.
You got to keep your mind open. And, you know, a lot of individuals sometimes, they're too risk averse. Now, look, you fail, you learn. Right?
That's right.
You just learn from your mistake.
That's right. And it's, you know, one of the great qualities of, one of the things I look for in people is, you know, everyone fails. Everyone stumbles. But how do they react to that, and what do they do to pick themselves up? I stumble daily, but it's how you respond to that and how you engage with people and how you cultivate relationships that ultimately matters.
Well, it's all about people, isn't it?
It is.
So, you know, human resources isn't just about working internally. It's about humans, and this is a people world. It will always be a people world. Machines will never take that over because people are the ones who ultimately will make decisions. And so from my perspective, what you've talked about today is really providing a good blueprint, a good outline of what individuals can really do with their lives if they really think about it and think it through and take a little chance.
That's right.
How's your wife doing?
You know, Maggie's great. We've got I've got two little boys now.
I know.
So
I know.
Flynn's 2.5 and just...
No energy, I'm
no
sure.
Energy,
no energy.
You know, nothing. He sleeps all day and all night. And
yeah, dreaming.
Jasper's 7 months and is, you know, no one loves my wife more than Jasper does. So he's great, and the kids are doing wonderful. We took him camping earlier this year, and I learned that I will never take a 2.5 and a 7-month-old camping ever again.
See, there was a learn.
That's right. One of many humbling lessons I've learned.
Maybe
parenthood.
We'll use the word epic, like epic fail, in terms of that. But that's okay. You know, you learn.
That's right.
I could have told you that. I mean, my idea of camping is a hotel without a restaurant.
That's right.
But that's just me personally, you know, in terms of it. But you would actually, that's good. Is she still working for the nonprofit?
She is. She's actually with the Maine Community Foundation now.
And their cause?
They do a whole host of different things. So Maine Community Foundation really provides support for cultivating the next generation of leaders in Maine, which is something that my wife works on, figuring out ways to empower communities to better serve the needs of the people who live there. They have a new CEO who just started, I think, recently, Steve Rowe, who was I practiced law with Steve at the firm I was with here.
Another recovering
lawyer turning to the public good and really contributing back in a positive way.
Matt, it's been great having you on the show today. I want to thank you so much.
Thank you, David. I appreciate it.
You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB. Thank you for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB, 1310 a.m., or streaming live on WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at HRPowerHour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.